It's showtime.
Okay, Tokyo,
South America,
Australia,
France,
Germany,
UK,
Africa.
Here we go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. And here we go, off and running on this 17th day of May 2022. This is The Horn. HeadOn.live is where you'll find us on the interweb tubes. That's where you go if you'd like to be part of the, well, the merry, wacky, zany, real-time, madcap, multimedia extravaganza that is The Horn chat room during the 3 hours in which this program is live, Monday through Friday, 5 to 8 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, 2 to 5 p.m. Pacific Daylight Time, all time zones in between, and the great globe round. And if you happen to pop on by right now, well, you will be greeted by early arrivers Anatole and New Jersey Nick and Squeaky and Stockton Larry, and capably moderated by longtime inveterate, indefatigable veteran pet remoderator Sparky, who being third stage field navigator, nonetheless has not folded space and is not man cave. Hi, I'm Robin. It is Titanic Tuesday, and Titanic Tuesday, for those of you who are new to the program, Titanic Tuesday is the day that we at least take note of the right kind of right-wing intellect that says, hey, look at that really, really, really big iceberg. Let's sail this passenger ship right into it. Because that's what happens with right-wing intellect. But I'm getting ahead of myself, because there are things we have to take care of at the beginning of every program, and this, every program here at The Horn begins with gratitude, and this program is no different, so that means we start out with thanks going out to our 17th day of the month subscribers, and so thank you most kindly indeed to Gary Laborman. Thank you so kindly. We have one subscriber on the 17th of the month, and Labor Man is that subscriber. Thank you. And so we went down to 1075 last night, and so our fundraising goal for today is 1375. And hey, look, there's pinch hit midweek chat room utility moderator and all around great guy, Brother Bishop Steve from Georgistan. Steve! Good to see you. Good to see you this Titanic Tuesday afternoon. So 1375, we need to get that brought down some, just so that I can pay the mid-month bills. We've been hemorrhaging this month, and not in a good way. Not that there's a good way to do that, but it's been brutal. And so if we could get out in front of this deficit, or at least bring it down some, it would mean I'm a little less stressed. The beautiful thing of not being corporate and not being run by advertisements for buy gold now or stupid beats or anything like that is that it conveys a certain amount of freedom, but it also conveys a certain amount of non-freedom, because one wonders how long it can last. And so far it's lasted for almost 2 decades, and that's Pretty damned impressive, really, when you get right down to it. So we'll get into various and sundry items for this this Titanic Tuesday. But I want to start with Joey's journal. He sent it yesterday, but because of the nature of the conversation yesterday, it just felt like, but no. Joey repurposed the journal for today. The elephant in the womb. The elephant in the womb. Well, I would apologize for our absence the past 3 weeks, but I'm not going to because I've been spending much of my free time, energy, and money working for Tim Ryan, John Fetterman, and Raphael Warnock. Good for you, Joey. For instance, I've been making phone calls, knocking on doors, hanging door hangers, and speaking of hangers, Jeffrey and I went and dropped off hangers to several participants who protested at the anti-abortion protest in Cleveland on Saturday morning. I picked up Jeffrey from Harvard last week after his semester ended, and he was sad the semester was over because he spent his evenings with the ladies, female co-eds, and his days in the Harvard yard eating all the recently blooming foliage. I asked him how his thesis was coming along, and he simply told me I should ask the co-eds. Oh, dear. But is co-eds even a word anymore? While I was rounding up hangers, Jeffrey and Junior were making up signs for the protest. I'll let Jeffrey tell you about it.
Well, yes, Joey 2, and I made up a few signs that we took with us to Cleveland Saturday morning. Sadly, the Republicans have adopted one great animal as their mascot, the elephant. My sign simply read, "Watch out for the elephant in the womb." Joey 2, the kangaroo, made a sign that stated,
"Hi, ladies, fight like a womb man this fall." Oh, good job, Joey 2. And then Junior made a sign. Junior said, "If you want the government in your pants, fuck a Republican." I think we're going to have to put Junior in timeout. Hey, great job, Junior. I began learning some colorful language in junior high myself. That boy.
I just hope all the good people of the United States of Amnesia have a memory like an elephant and don't forget what the Republican Supreme Court is currently advocating in the taking of reproductive rights from women, and come election time, all you women need to vote in droves, and the men who love them and care about them, and are their friends, and their sons, and their husbands, their cousins, their nephews, their uncles. Along those lines, at the protest, Joey went around and tried to make sure everybody was registered to vote. He found a group of four young women who were not, and Joey simply instructed them to go to their phones, go to rockthevote.org, and register to vote. Those four women are now registered, and that was worth the whole trip.
Indeed it was. And so I found it interesting. I saw some statistics earlier today noting what is on the minds of Democrats. In relation to the 2022 midterms, reproductive freedom was like number four, but it was up 7 points from 10%. The economy, which no president can really much affect, was number one. You always got to wonder, you know, who it. Because nobody I know ever gets these calls, and I realize that they're small samples, just a couple of thousand people. But damn. Well, anyway, on the lighter side of things, we spent most of the day yesterday watching baseball. That would be Sunday, while catching up on our newspaper reading. One of the games we watched featured the Los Angeles Dodgers facing off against the Philadelphia Phillies. Of course, Robin was named after a great Philadelphia Phillies pitcher by the name of Robin Roberts.
I find the name Robin Roberts interesting because it's incongruent. Of course, we love the lovely Robin Kincaid and all her endeavors in the recent run for the 51st in West Virginia, but we despise Judge Roberts. And speaking of baseball and the Supreme Court Justice, Judge Roberts is really not just calling balls and strikes as he once claimed. Keep on running, Robin. You'll win eventually, and so will we as Americans. Remember, Bernie ran 6 times in local elections before he won his first election.
He was considerably younger then. I don't know if I got 6 elections in me. But I do. I plan on being back in 2024.
Great analysis, Giraffe.
As we were watching the Dodgers play the Phils, we noticed that the man on the mound for the Dodgers was a rookie pitching his first major league game by the name of Michael Grove. Michael Grove is from Wheeling, West Virginia, and attended West Virginia University. He was very successful on the mound as a Mountaineer and pitched well on Sunday in his first outing, but he didn't get the win. But don't worry about that Mountaineer on the mound, because he'll be back to win his first campaign, and so will you, Robin. Well, thank you, Joey. The pitcher for the Phils was a good young pitcher by the name of Aaron Nola. Nola is ironically from New Orleans, N-O-L-A. Nola's name is an acronym, N-O-L-A, New Orleans, Louisiana, L-A. However, when he's on the mound, L-A, in L-A, Nola stands for No L-A. As I was watching the game, I couldn't help but think about all the people that I've met from the aforementioned suburb of Glendale, California, which is located just east of Dodger Stadium in lovely Chavez Ravine. I was disappointed to hear Billable Rick mention that Glendale is not a progressive community, as I suggested in a journal approximately 3 weeks ago, especially since I recently sat by a man from Glendale at Dodger Stadium in 2019 who was Armenian. As it turns out, Glendale, California is now nearly 45% made up of Armenians. Well, if you've watched, Goliath? The first season, there's an entire subplot of the Armenian community in the greater L.A. area. So that was a great show. Yes, and if Putin keeps getting away with all these invasions of former USSR countries, many more Armenians may be showing up in Glendale, considering Armenia was originally a Russian province or state in the USSR. Well, actually, Jeffrey, I think it goes back, historically, it goes further back than that. Got to remember the Armenian genocide as perpetrated by the Turks. Oh, they don't like to be reminded of that. But Jeffrey continues, as it turns out, Glendale, California has a very diverse population made up of 45% Armenians, approximately 20% Latinx, 7% Asian, and 25% white, but very few blacks appear to live in the former Ku Klux Klan-protected city of nearly 200,000 people. On the other hand, about 3 weeks ago was the 200th anniversary of the birthday of one of our greatest presidents, Ulysses Grant. Conversely to Glendale, California, one of President Ulysses Grant's main missions was to eliminate the Ku Klux Klan and any other bastion cities. Grant was also a staunch advocate of the 13th, 14th, and 15th Amendments. Archie Bunker sang in the show's lead-off song for all of the title track for All of the Family, "We could use a man like Herbert Hoover again." Actually, Archie, we could use a man like Ulysses Grant again, because with this attempt of the current Supreme Court to abolish abortion, the personhood part of the 14th Amendment for women in this country is seriously in jeopardy. Finally, speaking of the Supreme Court, President Ulysses Grant restored the Supreme Court, and after what Mitch McConnell has done to the court, this current court is in real need of some restoration. Nicely observed, Jeffrey. Well, as it turns out, Ulysses Grant, whose original name was Hiram Ulysses Grant, was from Point Pleasant, Ohio, which is right on the Ohio River, about an hour's drive southeast of Cincinnati, and Grant was a huge baseball fan. Many believe he was the first original Reds fan way back in the 1870s. Well, thank you, Junior.
Robin Kincaid is believed to be the second original Cincinnati Reds fan.
No, Junior, that would be Robin's daddy. That was the third. You know, seriously, growing up in Northwest Alabama, there weren't just a whole bunch of Reds fans down there. Especially back in the early 70s when the Reds routinely stomped the guts out of the Braves.
No, Junior, I realize it appears that Robin has joined the Whig Party, which was prominent back in that time. It does not mean she was alive back then.
Jeffrey, we don't talk about a lady's hair. Gee, thanks, guys. I'm sure Robin's going to love that. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, anyways, the Reds are really having a rough year, as that great franchise has the worst record in baseball and has gotten off to the worst start in National League history. Are they mathematically eliminated yet? I lost track when my heart broke. Yesterday, Joey says, we also watched the Reds play the Pirates in Pittsburgh, featuring the Reds' great young pitcher, Hunter Green, with the help of a teammate, actually pitched a no-hitter. And, you know, that's just a sign if you were born on a rotten day and your luck just stinks. A two-pitcher no-hitter, and you still lose the game 1-0. And it's only happened 6 other times in Major League history.
It's the exact opposite of the old joke, you know, two people talking, and, you know, they're bowling fans, and one of them says, hey, you know what, I know somebody who bowled 301. The other person goes, well, that's mathematically impossible. You can't bowl 301. The first guy says, well, did you ever see somebody bowl 300 and lose? Like I said, the exact opposite. Junior chiming in. A no-hitter being pitched by the losing team is as rare as a blue moon, or in this case, a red blood moon.
Yes, we did have a rare red blood moon on Sunday. Unfortunately, not even a red moon could help the Reds. However, speaking of moons, there was some real irony as the game ended in Pittsburgh on Sunday as the final pitcher for the Pirates, Dave Bednar, who was originally from Moon Township, PA, faced Reds batter T.J. Friedel, who was originally from Mars, Pennsylvania. Unfortunately, Robin, I think it's going to be light years before the Reds are good again. I think you're right. But God, I love that. I love that old Pirates-Reds rivalry. God, what was it? The 1971 the National League Championship broke my little 8-year-old heart. However, speaking of no-hitters, I'll tell an interesting story of my experience meeting a man who pitched a perfect game in the major leagues in tomorrow's journal. Wow. So, this has been Joey's Journal for More in Monday, the 16th of May, served up on Titanic Tuesday, the 17th of May. With Giraffe saluting a man who has the name of Moran, but it's not a Moran. Jim Moran served in the United States Congress representing Virginia's 8th District for 25 years, from 1991 to 2015. He sat on the influential House Appropriations Committee and Democratic Steering and Policy Committee. Jim Moran was and is a staunch supporter of gun control and a ban on assault rifles and weapons, which, after what happened this past weekend in Buffalo and Laguna Beach, Archie Bunker should be singing, "We could sure use a man like Jim Moran again." Yesterday was Jim Moran's 77th birthday. Two notes of irony. Jim Moran was born in Buffalo, not far from where the shooting took place this weekend, and he's currently a professor at Virginia Tech, the site of the 2007 mass shooting. As an aside, is it not interesting how Republicans refuse to blame guns for these egregious shootings and just simply want to declare the shooters mentally ill? All the while, they endlessly want to cut funding for the treatment of the mentally ill. And so, with all the foregoing having been said, there is a $100 challenge on the table, courtesy of Joey and Giraffe and Junior and Chai, too. And it's the No Elephants in the Womb Challenge. So thank you for that. That would get us down to, what did we say? Yeah, that would get us down to $11.75 if it was met. So I hope people will take the challenge, courtesy of our little quadrille of merrymakers, politically committed volunteers, and various members of the animal kingdom. Seriously, and in all seriousness, thank you for doing work for Tim Ryan and John Fetterman and Raphael Warnock, Joey, and the rest of your merry band. You know, some days you just get a piece of news and it's like, really? So John Fetterman had a stroke. And of all the people running, for reasons that are probably obvious, I mean, I have a deep amount of abiding respect for John Fetterman. Because he actually sees the LGBTQ community, QQIA plus community, as fully vested members of society and citizens deserving of all the same rights and privileges appurtenant to being white and cis and male and hetero in this country. And for that reason, he has my, and he's a damn good progressive. He had a stroke. And so this being primary day in Pennsylvania, Bamistan, Vania, his wife went out and voted for him, but he himself, John Fetterman, was unable to, as he seeks the Democratic nomination for the Senate seat currently held by god-awful Republican Pat Toomey. Yeah, I always think of that Bible verse when I think of Pat Toomey. I would you were hot or cold, but you are neither. You are lukewarm, and I will spit you out of my mouth. Pat Toomey is going to wind up looking like a downright statesman compared to the wackadoodles running for the Republican nomination. And there's been much blather all day long about that. So, you know, Dr. Oz, some businessman type. And what's her name? Barnett? Who is trying to out-maggot Nitwit Nero. Her being a black woman. I know. She actually pushed back against Nitwit Nero and said, you know, I got more votes when I ran for Congress in this district than you did, Don. And so we'll see how that goes. But of course, the candidate of choice for Nitwit Nero in the Pennsylvania race is, in fact, Dr. Mehmet Oz, speaking of the Armenian genocide. Oops. That was kind of cheap. I apologize. And Connor Lamb, with all of one congressional term under his belt, decided he wanted to go for the Senate seat as well. So he's squaring off against John Fetterman. Fetterman was said to have had a huge lead, and he's having a pacemaker and automatic defibrillator installed in his chest today. Apparently the stroke that he had was brought on by atrial fibrillation, which is just basically a rhythm problem with one's heart. The electrical impulses get dysregulated, and it's not a good thing. But I have high hopes for John Fetterman, and high hopes especially for his recovery. But there's a possibility there that he can come back strong and beat whichever. Well, you know, good, God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, fundamentalist, homosexual, at least in one case, not Christian, Republicans attempt to retain that seat. Raphael Warnock, of course, looks like he's going to be going up against Herschel Walker. The debate should be for the ages. I agree, Billable Rick. Billable Rick says, let's give Joey and company a cowbell for their civic engagement. I am right there with you. Good call, Billable. And thank you to our pal Christopher, who took a $15 bite out of the $100 no elephant in the womb challenge. The horn forever. Thank you, Christopher. You're so kind, and I appreciate it. We all do. You know, when I send out thanks for the people who contribute to keep this program going, it's not in my own name, it is in the name of the entire community. So that... Because we all benefit by this continuing, the conversation that we have here, the exchange of information. So thank you, Christopher. Thank you for the challenge, Joey. And thank you as well to Ralph's. A $10 matching challenge in honor of Robin's stupid beats comment. Well, thank you. Did you ever wonder who buys that stuff? I mean, I'm sorry. We annoyed people throughout the entire Horn Family Community Congregation for about a year or so with our Horn Nutraceuticals ad, culminating, of course, in the proprietary formula developed by the scientists at Horn Nutraceuticals for Alabama sex clams. It's a pity they became extinct. But thank you, Ralph. So, actually, now there's $95 in challenges still on the table, and that would get us more than that. Well, it would get us close to $220. That's only $80 short of actually funding one of the shows last week. Thank you. With a question, Scott in San Diego asks, has Merrick Garland just tossed a new iceberg into the pool? And the New York Times is, in fact, reporting, and I saw this right before the program as well, the DOJ is said to have asked the House panel investigating January 6th for transcripts in the clearest sign yet of a wide-ranging inquiry. The House committee has thus far interviewed over 1,000 people, and the DOJ could conceivably, and this is so speculatory, Robin. It's so speculative that I almost don't even want to go there, but Scott raised the issue, and the Times saying that the transcripts could be used as evidence in potential criminal cases to pursue new leads or as a baseline text for new interviews conducted by federal law enforcement officials. Well, gosh, one hopes that it's all of those things. But it's also Merrick Garland's Department of Justice, and you'll pardon me if I don't get all excited, because this is also very wait and see. And it's been wait and see. And we're waiting and waiting and waiting and waiting. But one would like to be able to, you know, dare to dream that this turns into something. Of course, I'd also like to dare to dream that maybe Congress will come up with a Klan Act. You know, they don't want to do a Klan Act for the 21st century. They don't want to do anything about the damn guns. How about we do something about the damn people? Because, frankly, and I'm sort of processing this on the fly, work with me here. If we take into account the conduct of the Klan back in the last quarter of the 19th century, we understand why the Klan Act had to be passed. And it was because a terrorist organization had grown up in the United States as a sort of way of fighting a rearguard action against the South's loss in the Civil War. But the institutional and organizational structure of the Klan did not spring fully formed like Athena from the head of Zeus, from the mind of Nathan Bedford Forrest. It started with little conversations. It started with whispered discussions in the dark and still of the night in various and sundry homes and cabins and the like, and meetings in the woods, and And ideas were promulgated, fleshed out, hashed out, and then spread until an organizational structure could be found or be created. I think that we are probably, you know, whenever you talk about history, you have to talk about context and the milieu of the time. And please don't think I'm going to some paranoia place. I'm not. I'm really, really not. But, for instance, there's that famous portrait of John Washington. Really, Robin? There's this famous portrait of George Washington with his Masonic Lodge apron on. And, man, I think his hand on a Bible or something. And this country, and by this country, I mean the white property-owning men,
were real joiners. And Freemasonry had developed in Europe and spread over to the to what were then the colonies and persisted into nationhood. And by the time the 19th century rolls around, you've got all kinds of secret societies and mystic organizations. And by the mid-19th century, you've got the flowering of what would become the college fraternity movement, all of which were formed as secret societies. The first Greek letter society was Phi Beta Kappa at William and Mary. And then around 1847, 1848, you get five fraternities. Three of them form at Miami University in Ohio, and that was the Miami Triad. Two of them form at Jefferson College in Cannonsburg, PA, and that's the Jefferson Duo. Now we're talking about things like Phi Delta Theta, Phi Gamma Delta, Sigma Chi, Beta Theta Pi, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And they all had their secret handshakes and their high signs and their Greek letters meant things, secret things. And in fact, that's how the Klan happens. Because of this mania for secret societies. And I think the Ku Klux Klan, those are said to be some sort of bullshit Greek words like Kuklon. I don't know. But the point is, somebody didn't just say, hey, let's form a racist terrorist organization. And then there was the Klan. There had to be an historic atmosphere in which this developed. And maybe we don't quite recognize it as easily in the modern era. For instance, the fraternity Phi Gamma Delta, back in 1848, it was founded on Founders Day is May 1st, 1848. I know because I had to memorize all this shit. A group of six young men wanted to form a study group, and they met in a log cabin in Cannonsburg, Pennsylvania, and one night, during their deliberations, you know, and they came up with their Greek letters and what the Greek letters meant, and they came up with a seal and a high sign and a handshake and a whispered password. And then one night, a great snowy white Allegheny Mountain owl came and perched on the windowsill of the cabin. And seeing that as a sign of providence, they adopted the aforementioned great snowy white Allegheny Mountain owl, which, if you have ever seen one, is absolutely a majestic raptor. Oh, just amazing. And, so that became the mascot. More importantly, though, those six young men who founded that fraternity were already all six members of the Masonic Lodge. So they based their ritual on Masonic ritual. And it developed historically that way. And I touched on this a little bit yesterday. But when Congress passed and Ulysses Grant signed into law the Klan Act, there wasn't a whole lot of hand-wringing about the free speech rights of domestic terrorists engaged in open insurrection against the legitimate civil government of the United States of America.
And the Klan was, under the leadership of Ulysses S. Grant, effectively suppressed. It would come back in the 20s as a, or in the 19-teens as a revamped organization, sure. But the paramilitary nature was stomped out. And what all this has to do with where I'm going is that in an electronic age, these terrorist organizings don't take place in cabins in the woods or clearings in the woods with blazing torches. They take place on Telegram. They take place in WhatsApp. They take place on various Reddit subreddits. They take place at, and there it is again, 4chan. But there's not a hell of a lot of difference between the discourse that's taking place electronically and the discourse that took place as the organizational structure that came to be the Ku Klux Klan developed. I think we missed the point. Well, it's kind of like something I observed years ago, that we somehow have a difficulty understanding that not all fascists wear spiffy Hugo Boss black uniforms and goose step. Some of them wear jeans and flannel shirts and fly the American flag as often as they can, wherever they can. You see where this is going? I really would like to have your thoughts on this. Because what Peyton Gadron, the man, the white man Peyton Gadron did, ain't much different than somebody, some white man taking matters into his own. Tell me the difference between what Peyton Gadron did and what those white men did who murdered Emmett Till. Okay, Peyton Gadron managed to murder 9 more people than Emmett Till. We talked about Viola Liuzzo last week. Except for killing 9 more people, what was the difference in what the Klansman who killed Viola Liuzzo did and what Peyton Gadron did? He had an ideology to which he specifically referred. We know now that he reconned the Buffalo area looking for a target. He actually lived about 200 miles southeast of Buffalo. But he saw Buffalo as his nearest opportunity to attack a concentration of African American community in Buffalo, and made plans. He stored his ammunition at a friend's house. And I found it interesting that there is a story out there that discusses Carl Cameron. Carl Cameron appeared with Nicole Wallace on MSNBC to talk about the role of Fox News TV Radio Rwanda and the Buffalo attack. He was 20 years, Carl Cameron was, 20 years. And Fox. And bear in mind, this comes with the caveat that I don't think Peyton Gadron was influenced by Fox. He says himself that he was radicalized on the internet. So, you know, that's your Proud Boys, your Boogaloo Incel Tactical Command Headquarters Executive Staff, your various and sundry Nazi groups, Identity of Europa and whatever. 106 pages he banged out. Peyton did. But I found it interesting that somebody like Carl Cameron, who gladly cashed Rupert Murdoch's paychecks for 20 years, is suddenly beginning to rethink some of what he once did. Because, of course, the all-day blather, the tiresome, wearisome all-day blather has been that, I said yesterday as the program wrapped up, I said, God, I can only imagine what Tucker Carlson's going to do. Well, I didn't have to wonder very long because, you know who caused Peyton Gadron to murder 10 people in Buffalo? Of course you do. At least according to Testicle Toasting Tucky. Democrats and liberals did that. Sure. But let's take a minute and check in with Carl Cameron.
It's 4 o'clock in New York. President Joe Biden today out with a clarion call for all Americans to reject the racist ideology that has time and time again led to deadly and devastating violence in communities all across the United States. After meeting with the families of the victims of the mass shooting in Buffalo that took place 4 days ago and visiting a memorial near the site of the shooting, President Biden gave a speech in which he commemorated each of the 10 victims. And then he said this.
White supremacy is a poison. It's a poison running through our, it really is. Running through our body politic. And it's been allowed to fester and grow right in front of our eyes. No more. I mean, no more. We need to say as clearly and force as we can that the ideology of white supremacy has no place in America. None. Look, failure for us to not say that, failure in saying that, is going to be complicity. Silence is complicity. It's complicity. We cannot remain silent. I call on all Americans to reject the lie. And I condemn those who spread the lie for power, political gain, and for profit.
President Joe Biden's clear-eyed denunciation there of white supremacy as a poison marks a return to an issue that animated and inspired his run for the presidency, what he described at the time as a battle for the soul of America. But now, the New York Times reports, quote, the challenge for a president who came to office preaching unity may be how to take on those preaching hate. And in the wake of the mass shooting in Buffalo, inspired by the racist Great Replacement Theory conspiracy, the political party and the movement that has wielded the racist theory as a political tool shows no signs of remorse or retrospection today. NBC News caught up with several Republican senators to ask them about replacement theory and its chief cheerleader, Tucker Carlson. Senator Tom Tillis claims that, quote, I've never had any fellow Republican bring up or even allude to its merit, referring to replacement theory. Senator Lindsey Graham claimed that replacement theory is, quote, more liberals talking about Republicans? And Senator Ron Johnson doubled down, saying he has no concerns about his comments back in April 2021 when he said on Fox News that Democrats are trying to, quote, remake the demographics of America. And from Fox News, nothing short of flagrant disinformation in service of obscuring Fox's own role in making replacement theory a mainstream rundown item. Take a listen to what two of Fox's most watched hosts had to say last night.
Yet even when Buffalo authorities confirmed that the Buffalo killer was a lone wolf, the gonzo journalists at Rolling Stone say, no, 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 no. There are accomplices here. The Republicans. It's so weak. I don't even want to talk about it tonight because it's so predictable. It's so lame because the real accomplices are in the media.
What he wrote does not add up to a manifesto. It is not a blueprint for a new extremist political movement, much less the potential inspiration for a racist revolution. Anyone who claims that it is lying or hasn't read it. So because a mentally ill teenager murdered strangers, you cannot be allowed to express your political views out loud. That's what they're telling you.
It's so weak. We're going to lead with it. It's where we start today with some of our favorite reporters and friends. Errol Southers is here, director of Homegrown Violent Extremism Studies at the University of Southern California. Also joining us, Miles Taylor, former chief of staff at the Department of Homeland Security, the co-founder and executive director of the Renew America Movement. Carl Cameron is here. He's the co-founder of Front Page Live and the former chief political correspondent for Fox News. He and I have spent many miles on the campaign trail together over the years. It's great to see you. And here at the table with me, Tony Deutsch, host of the podcast On Brand. Carl Cameron, I want to start with you. And I want to ask you, what goes on? I mean, obviously, a mass shooter is responsible for the violence and the heinous acts that the mass shooter committed. It is also true that the ideology left in the mass shooter's screed mirrors the ideology championed by Tucker Carlson. What happens at Fox News when something like this happens?
I can't even imagine. It's partly why I ended up getting out of there. It really is kind of horrible to think that journalists with national and international capacity are putting together this type of nonsense. I think the president did a great job. I wish he had done a lot of this a lot sooner, and we need a lot more from the left and the middle. And we got to watch out because the Republicans have become the purveyors of misinformation. And when our two-party system is broken like that, democracy is seriously in trouble. The president acknowledged that. It's time to actually start doing things and maybe taking some names and putting people in jail.
I mean, wow, Carl, let me follow up with you. I mean, what you, I think, just touched on, maybe inadvertently, is that where the mainstream of America is frankly where President Biden was today, saying that white supremacy is poison on our body politic. Explain then how Tucker Carlson has so many viewers, because he's not in the mainstream of the body politic. I mean, what he espouses is the fringe of the
fringe. Au contraire, Nicole.
I really can't channel how Tucker believes in any of this stuff and how the network can go through with it. I will say this, however, it is very clear that this type of lying and deception is catching on. There's racism across the borders. Immigrants are being beaten up and being harassed more than ever. Judaism is constantly under fire. And all of this is being essentially accepted by a far, far right community of people who have nothing but grievance based on lies. How a network, and it's not just Fox, social media in general is the biggest purveyor of all of this. And there's a couple of things about this that are really important. A lot of the immigrants who are coming over here use WhatsApp instead of watching television or using other platforms. And if their aunt gets a piece of garbage and passes it on to the nephew, a lot of those immigrants are coming to the United States thinking that Trumpism and the kind of nonsense that comes from Fox News is an actual reality here. And it goes to all types of racism and hate, not just Democrat versus Republican or black versus white. Asians, Latinos, all of them are being bombarded with this type of disinformation.
Seems pretty clear, doesn't he? Of course, you know, he couldn't say any of that for 20 years because the check kept clearing. We, on the other hand, have the same near 20 years, and we have been saying that. But what I find telling is the call that maybe it's time to start putting some people in jail. Well, you need a legal mechanism to put somebody in jail. And I don't want to get too far down the rabbit hole because, you know, my eyeballs will roll back into my head and probably the same thing will happen to you. But Ulysses Grant did have the benefit of the Klan Act. And you know, unless you're like a member of the Sons of the Confederacy, is there any question that the Klan Act was right and good and decent and constitutional and probably saved this country from descending into yet more and worse violent conflict? Feels that way to me. And so while I'm not going to sit here and say that I've got a, you know, I have before me. Oh, that's a package of saltines. Oh, it'll rattle. I have before me a draft, a piece of draft legislation called the 4chan Act of 2022. I don't. And we have to take into account that we have a Supreme Court with a radicalized view of the First Amendment. You know, a First Amendment that says that something they call the conscience of a pharmacist can simply overrule the orders of a physician that a medication be dispensed to someone. And which has no logical end. I mean, what if you're a pharmacist who, and I know this seems to run contrary, but what if you're a pharmacist who believes that prostate cancer is an evolutionary process and that it's wrong to treat it? And, well, under the conscience rules of the Supreme Court's grunting pronouncements and various right-wing state legislatures, well, you know, he can't prevent the patient from getting it, but he can just say, well, you might get it, but you ain't going to get it from me because you're supposed to, God wants you to have that. Kind of makes you wonder if there are any Christian Scientist pharmacists. That's almost too much cognitive dissonance to countenance, isn't it? But what if? Where's the end of it? And so, does it take much mental gymnastics to imagine a Supreme Court opinion that talks about how, well, you know, there's speech out there that we don't like, but we got to have the speech we don't like in order to have the speech we do. And the closely held religious views of Hobby Lobby or the rights of toxic grannies to wave fetus posters in the faces of women who are going to get a mammogram? But by God, if we don't do something, well, hell, probably a 97% chance that even if we do something, it's going to keep on happening. Because at the bottom of this is a fascist revolt. And fascists don't go quietly into the night. So what would you arrest Tucker Carlson for? And what a pathetic defense that was. Oh, he's a lone wolf. But in his manifesto, he says he was radicalized. That's a passive verb. That's something being done to him. That is not him doing something. It's not the active voice. That's the passive voice that Stephen New York hates so much. Something was done to him. So I don't know. Maybe at the editorial meeting, they looked down the table and they said, listen, Frau Ingram, testicle toaster, pay attention. You got to go out there and defend Fox because they're coming for us. It's time to go to the mattresses. I'm sorry, I've been watching The Offer and kind of all godfathered up right now. But if we could get the conversation actually happening, I'm curious to know if anybody thinks that we just have to live with this. Or can we put some sort of guardrails up where privileged 18, 17, 16-year-old boys who spend too much time behind the computer, in front of the computer monitor, don't get quite so easily radicalized? Hey, kid, go out in the sunshine. Just sitting in the dark all the time playing Black Ops is not a great look for you. I don't know. Seriously. As to Biden's Buffalo remarks, Scott in San Diego says, I'm sorry, but his tired platitudes are older than water and twice as weak. Anybody who believes what he said and how he said it will make one whit of tangible difference is only deluding themselves. Biden's farting against thunder. Is what he said audible? Yeah, but only barely. And that's the problem a president faces. You got to say something. And it's probably not going to come to much. But the modern American president is the comforter, the griever in chief. Even though I'm sure Sammy Bad Breath would immediately say, well, there's nothing in the Constitution about being the griever in chief. Wrong accent, I know. But he couldn't be silent. And I think back to when the Supreme Court opinion was leaked. I immediately thought of John Brown. Again, just to review, John Brown was born in New York, moved westward in the great westward migration of the mid-19th century, the same period of time that saw the growth of these secret societies and the like. And he gets to Kansas in the midst of the great bloody struggle over whether Kansas would be a free state or a slave state, and that is when Kansas got the moniker Bleeding Kansas, because the slavers were more than happy to kill. And a few of the abolitionists were all too happy to, well, defend themselves. Remember, white men beat other white men in the Congress of the United States because one of the white men dared to speak out against slavery and, well, you know, Southern honor demanded that he be beaten within an inch of his life. In the Congress. And so it's out of Bleeding Kansas that and just random bloodthirsty I think we can call the Confederates proto-fascists. That he hatches his plan to go and just get it on. Take over the Harper's Ferry, Virginia Armory. Foment an uprising of enslaved people. And start bringing some of the deepest fears of the enslavers to life. It didn't work out that way. It didn't. But it was in many ways the shot heard round the world to the Civil War. And make no mistake, these right-wing asshats hunger for it. The longer we wait, the more likely it becomes that they become the federal government and that their targets become us. Again, November 2022 is a vote like your life depends on it moment, because it does. And I didn't get a pony is not a viable defense to staying home. And we have to pull together, because if we pull against each other, the people who weaponize the Peyton Gadrins of the world, already ascendant, you know, Steve Bannon said that, we are in the ascendant, will complete the work. So that's the filler obster, and thank you to Nina. Thank you, Nina. Great show as always, dear Robin. Thank you, Nina. You're so kind. And so we are now down to $65 to go on the No Elephants in the Womb challenge. And after that, we got another $10 challenge. Thank you, Nina. Thank you for jumping in alongside Christopher and helping us chase the lupine pest off the porch. Thank you. Let's see here. Let me open this up and see where it takes me. Okay, this is an ad. No, that's an ad. Never mind. Skip the ad. This is Representative Hakeem Jeffries speaking truth to power in the form of Supreme Court Associate Justice Clarence Pubes on the Coke can Slappy Thomas. This is an epic smackdown, Darlene in Connecticut says. I'm impressed. It's high time for Dems like him to start mercilessly calling this shit out. So let's take a moment and appreciate a little bit of fire. This happened on Lawrence O'Donnell's program.
Supreme Court Justice Clarence Thomas said that peaceful protesters near the homes of Supreme Court justices...
Hold on. Let me access that on the other device, because the audio just seems like it's way too low. I mean, you know, by the way, Carl Cameron said maybe it's time we started arresting some people. Here's a crazy idea. How about revoking the citizenship of Rupert fucking Murdoch? He's got American citizenship, doesn't he? And it's not permanent. You can screw that up. Maybe we need to do that. Anyway, okay, we will have better audio now.
Supreme Court Justice Clarence Thomas said that peaceful protesters near the homes of Supreme Court justices are bullying the justices, and that Americans are, quote, becoming addicted to wanting particular outcomes, not living with the outcomes we don't like, end quote. Our next guest, Congressman Hakeem Jeffries, responded to Justice Thomas during yesterday's House Judiciary Committee hearing.
If Justice Thomas really wants to deal with bullying in America, or this problem of people supposedly unwilling to accept outcomes that they don't like, I've got some advice for Justice Thomas. Start in your own home. Have a conversation with Jeannie Thomas. She refused to accept the legitimacy of the 2020 presidential election. Why? Because she didn't like the outcome. And so instead, she tried to steal the election, overthrow the United States government, and install a tyrant. That's bullying. That's being unwilling to accept an outcome because you don't like the results, because the former twice impeached so-called president of the United States of America lost legitimately to Joe Biden. How did she respond? Instead, she said the Bidens should face a military tribunal in Guantanamo Bay on trumped up charges of sedition. You've got to be kidding me. And lastly, let me ask this question of Brother Thomas. Why are you such a hater? Hate on civil rights, hate on women's rights, hate on reproductive rights, hate on voting rights, hate on marital rights, hate on equal protection under the law, hate on liberty and justice for all, hate on free and fair elections. Why are you such a hater? And you think you can get away with it, escape public scrutiny? Because you think that shamelessness is your superpower?
Mr. Chairman, a point
of order.
Well,
here's a news flash straight from the House Judiciary Committee.
Point of order.
Truth pressed to the ground will rise again, and truth will be your kryptonite.
Joining us now is Democratic Representative Hakeem Jeffries of New York. He is the chair of the House Democratic Caucus, a member of the House Judiciary Committee, and was an impeachment manager for the first impeachment trial of Donald Trump. Thank you very much for joining us tonight. And that sounded like a moment that had been building for you for a while.
Well, that certainly is the case. I think Justice Clarence Thomas has been an outrage and an abomination from the very beginning. And I think many Americans across the country feel that way. But the culmination was really twofold for me. One, this was a hearing where we were discussing and marking up a bill on the absence of a judicial code of ethics for the Supreme Court. Every other federal judge in the system has to abide by a code of ethics. The Supreme Court does not. They think they can police themselves. We see it's a runaway majority. That's what the leaked opinion suggests. And then Justice Thomas had the nerve to lecture America about bullying and being unwilling to accept outcomes that we don't like. It was just too much to take at that particular point in time.
And this is a judge who has ruled on a case involving his wife's communications with the White House chief of staff. That it is against the law. There is one federal law saying that judges cannot, the Supreme Court justices cannot rule on cases involving their spouses. He has already done that.
Yeah, and this is part of the challenge that we have here, that Justice Roberts has taken a position that Supreme Court justices effectively can police themselves. They cannot. And Clarence Thomas and this sordid affair with Jeannie Thomas and her involvement in the January 6th insurrection and the effort to try to hide her records, which is the case that Justice Thomas was ruling on, is totally unacceptable. And so I think as Democrats, we wanted to make the point that no Supreme Court justice, and certainly Justice Thomas, is above the law, above public scrutiny, or above public accountability.
Because they do not discipline themselves, the only discipline available for Supreme Court justices is impeachment.
Well, that's the ultimate penalty that should be paid in cases of egregious violation where there's been a constitutional crime committed. But I think the step that we have taken as House Democrats at this moment, led by Chairman Nadler and Congressman Hank Johnson, is to actually put a judicial code of conduct into place for the Supreme Court justices and then work to try to make sure that there's teeth and accountability if there's a failure to comply. So that was what the legislation that we were marking up at that particular hearing was all about. Of course, every single Republican opposed it.
And that's a fact. Thing is, though, it gets to be, and I just want to be, well, open about this. How the Supreme Court is the highest court in the land. Their word is literally law. It is unchallengeable short of a remedy enacted by Congress. And, of course, for quite some time, Congress hasn't even been able to decide where to go for lunch. And so a Judicial Accountability Act that says that there are just things that the Supreme Court can't freaking do, or that a Supreme Court justice can't do, becomes a question of, well, then who tells them that? Do you have a do you have a commission or a committee of Supreme Court ethics? Well, the theory then goes that then the Supreme Court is not supreme, because it's answerable to a body that is arguably higher than them. And who do they answer to? And then there's the question, then, okay, well, we will let the Supreme police themselves by voting to ban one of their one or more of their members from participating in a ruling. Well, it doesn't take long to figure out how that might work, does it? Let's not put that in place just right now. If that was the case, you wouldn't even be able to read a dissent to the upcoming revocation of the citizenship status of the women of this country. There's always criminal prosecution. The Supreme Court, members of the Supreme Court are not immune to prosecution like the President of the United States is. So if, say, Sammy Bad Breath was to open up with an AR-15 and wipe out a few dozen people, he could be charged with murder. They serve on good behavior for life. And good behavior can be, unfortunately, all too fluid a definition. And so we're back to impeachment. And by the way, that clip, some of the things Hakeem Jeffries, Representative Hakeem Jeffries, was talking about, you might take notice, frankly, I'd appreciate it if you did, that these are all things we have discussed on this program for literally years. This is another one of those out in front of, so far out in front of the curve, it feels like straight road moments. This is that road through Monument Valley that just, you know, you stand in the middle of the road, shoot a 30-06, drive a couple of miles down the road and pick up the bullet where it just finally ran out of gas and fell on the ground. Someone needs to file a bill of impeachment against Clarence Pubes on the Coke Can Slappy Thomas. They just do. Because there's a clear-cut violation there that he ruled on a case involving his wife when he is forbidden by federal statute from doing so. And let the evidence be presented in front of the House of Representatives. Let the House vote on it. Let the bill of impeachment issue. Do the same thing with Ann's boy, Neil. Do the same thing with Brat, and do the same thing with the handmaid. Only in that instance, under a charge of lying to Congress. And while you're at it, before it even goes to trial in the Senate, refer it to the Department of Justice. It's time to stop bringing slinkies to grenade fights. Oh, and by the way, you know that maybe somewhere along the way we get an answer about Brat's mortgage. Maybe, kind of, possibly. Maybe it's time to have a better definition of good behavior. You think? It's worth considering. Let's go over and check in with Scott. Hey, Scott.
Hey, Robin.
How are you?
I was just stepping back from turning on the fan to sit back in my chair.
Oh, I thought you were stepping back from the brink or from sitting on the ledge and flicking cigarette butts at the maggot hats below.
You remind me of Mo Howard at the fancy party just after he's thrown the pie that Curly has snuck into the party, swiped off the table, tossed it in the air, and it is stuck to the ceiling, whereupon Mo Howard is engaged by this fancy lady in fancy dress and diamonds decked out in jewels and stuff. And she notices that Mo's rather nervous because he knows the pie is up there and it won't stay up there forever. And he's glancing up. He's looking at her. She's looking at him. She says, "Sir, you look as if the sword of Damocles is hanging over your head." And he says, "Lady, you don't know the hammer. You must be psychic." Anyway. That's yes, I am near the brink. I woke up today and tuned into this and decided why play silly games? We're not going to win on the gun issue. That ship has sailed. There are people in the main salon who are having a party right now as we speak.
Yes.
And that ship ain't never coming back. And there are so many other ships that have sailed. You talk about the malignant presence of Fox so-called news on the TVs in the low tier of the cable channels. I mean, if you just sign up for cable, you'll get it. You don't have to pay anything extra for it. So you've got that going on, and Tucker. I don't know if you saw, I think it was Lawrence O'Donnell last week was talking about Fox News, and he made the comment, the guest brought it up and Lawrence elaborated on it, that nothing goes out over that channel without the specific say-so of either Rupert Murdoch or one of the younger Murdochs.
Yeah, one of his spawn.
Vice president in charge of befuddling the populace. Somebody okays every fucking syllable that's uttered on that channel. And, you know, this is what we're up against, Robin. I say we, like I am going to have any influence over the outcome.
You and that mouse in your pocket.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Have a bit of cheese, my little furry friend. It's gotten to the point where, and I'm sure my previous email about Biden's Buffalo remarks, I know he means well, Your Honor. But, you know, we've got to just lead him back into the House and let him sit a while and get his bearings. It's almost worse than nothing. Because there's nothing behind what he says except perhaps authentic feelings. But feelings and 75 cents will get you a bad coffee at the food truck. Maybe today's not the day for me to call in, because I really am. I've had it. I've just fucking had it, Robin. So yeah, if you think you can do it, talk me off the ledge. I'm not.
No, I'm going to hand you a cigarette and a lighter, and I know you don't want one.
Yeah.
But
wouldn't mind a cigarette long about
it's
now.
Interesting the phrase you just used, because literally seconds ago, I received an email from Lady B.
Oh, Lady B, call in. Let's chat.
The subject line of what Lady B sent was, "I'm about fit to be tied."
Well, great minds, you know how that works. And radio people to boot.
I'm getting real sick and tired of hearing about this is not the majority of Americans. Most Americans don't feel this way. Really? Well, where are they? I know that Horn listeners are a good lot, but these other people who supposedly represent a small majority seem to have an outsized say in how this country's run. They're winning local elections and are poised to run the country again because our Democratic leaders are still preaching bullshit about reaching across the aisle. 10 black people fucking died because an 18-year-old white boy who probably's never had sex exercised his First and Second Amendment rights to hate. He was holding a goddamn gun and the police didn't exercise their God-given right to fucking shoot him. They never do with white boys. Ever. Where are the good ones? The limousine liberals who can buy ads or hell, even support your show. Why is Tucker Carlson still in the air? Why is this shit allowed? People are not going to vote, Robin. Not if it means this shit stays the same. It'll be to all our detriment, but they will not show up for the people who are not showing up for them. I read somewhere that the First Amendment, which was created by white people, was actually only for white people. They wanted to be able to say whatever the fuck they wanted to say, and then when scolded for it, they would point to the First Amendment that allows them to say it. It's like a snake eating its tail. And editorially, Scott and Lady B, I will add that, yeah, every word of the Constitution was written for the benefit of white, cis, hetero, male, property-owning dudes, okay? As pointed out previously, the word woman does not appear in the Constitution. The closest women get is persons. We talked a week or so ago about the fact that I think the three-fifths clause comes up, and I'm just speculating here, because you can't count all the enslaved people, because some of them are women, and they don't count at all. As odious and hateful as the three-fifths clause is, they figured out a way to make it more so. And so, as far as the first 10 amendments to the Constitution, the so-called Bill of Rights, if you go back and you read the Federalist Papers, you'll find out that Madison and Hamilton really didn't think it was necessary. Madison was absolutely perplexed. Why would the state suppress speech or establish a religion? I mean, he really was an ivory tower intellectual. But basically, he was told, listen, you want this Constitution? You want this form of government? You put in the Bill of Rights. And he goes, oh, all right, whatever. And they're not ordered by order of importance. They're not ordered at all. It's just 10 things. It's kind of like the term in Greek for the 10 commandments. You know, we call them the 10 commandments. You know, thou shalt not. In Greek, it's just the Decalogue. It's the 10 words. And so Lady B's right. There was no free speech for indigenous people. There was certainly no free speech for women, white or otherwise.
Wait a minute.
And there was goddamn sure no free speech for people of color, but go ahead.
Well, then let me run this past you and Lady B and anybody else who wants to chime in on this. In the modern technology equivalent of the Bill of Rights, and maybe even the fucking Constitution, you've been to the big city, and you stand there and you want to cross over and go to that store over there to buy something nice for somebody.
I've been to two circuses, a rodeo, and a dinner on the ground.
But you got to wait because the traffic light is against you. So on the pole next to where you're standing is a little box, and it's so low down that a kid could press it. And there's a button that supposedly, if you press it, if you're facing the don't walk sign, that situation will change and you can cross over safely. Well, I say that those boxes do nothing. Those buttons are there for no other reason than to give the person pushing it the impression that their action will have some effect on when they get to cross over to the other side. And I'm kind of getting that sense that the Constitution and the Bill of Rights and the Supreme Court and the Congress and the presidency and all else is pretty much on par performance-wise with the little box on the pole at the major intersection in a town near you. Now, prove me wrong. Am I on to something, or am I just really down today?
No. You've got a right to be where you are. Let me finish up with what Lady B had to say.
Oh, I'm sorry.
That's okay.
Go ahead.
She says, Robin, it's just getting to be tiresome. The majority, why aren't they buying ads, billboards, Facebook ads? Where are these people, and why do they allow people like Tucker Carlson to spew a bunch of bullshit that resulted in the deaths of 10 black people? I'm scared. I don't want to shop anymore. That kid fucking won, dudette, and there isn't a goddamn thing anyone wants to do about it. So, yeah, the majority of Americans don't believe in this shit, right? I'm not from Missouri, but I believe their motto. Fucking show me.
Well, amen, Lady B. And I lived in Missouri during most of the 80s. And even if you show them, a lot of those folks, they still won't believe you. And it's gotten worse since the 80s. Just give you that hint.
Oh,
I'm astounded.
Yeah, without a doubt. But the thing is, and here's a wild blow your mind thought. You and I were probably in Missouri at the same time.
Yeah. Well, I was there from like 82 until about late 91, I guess. But think about this, Robin. You know how I used to way back. I used to. What was my tagline? It's going to be on my tombstone one day.
We're all screwed, Robin.
Well, I used to say Bob.
Yeah.
I even then, and even more recently, perhaps I didn't, and perhaps I'm not in touch with just how screwed we all are. It's like bean dip at the Super Bowl party. There's 18 or 20 layers of that stuff. There's many, multiple layers of screwedness.
Well, you know, one thing to take into consideration, Scott, is that once again, everything that they say is either confession or projection. So they talk about great replacement theory. Well, what have they pitched in recent years? Oh, let's all move to Idaho, or oh, let's all move to New Hampshire, and we will have a little white nationalist happy little homeland. Now, I don't know how they think they're going to get around the 13th and 14th Amendments, but that's their, you know, they want to literally, and they want to replace, you know, this replacement theory. They actually want to replace people who aren't as hateful as them. They want desperately to become freestanding majorities in little places where they think that they can set up their own little world. I mean, we've seen it happen in what, Montana, Wyoming, Idaho. A lot of it tends to happen in the vast, wide open spaces of the American West, where I don't know, the cranky people ride the range or some shit. But what Lady B says is true. We go through these events. We are remotely traumatized. And I get what Lady B says about not wanting to go grocery shopping. I mean, it's years and years and years now that I have pointed out the fact that I live in a place where people routinely strap heat just to go to Wally World, because I guess they're going to be ready when World War III breaks out in the dog food aisle.
Yeah, when you go down to buy a thing of milk, a loaf of bread, and a couple rolls of Charmin, you don't know when stuff's going to break out, Robin. You've got to be ready. You've got to be prepared. And my God, and I'm not saying that the right to bear arms is not part of our history and should be on some level part of our present, but if you've got a strap on your biggest shooting iron to make a routine trip to the Walmart or the Target or whatever, there's something wrong, and it's not necessarily in the surroundings or in the world at large, more places than not. The threat is in your head. The fear is in your head.
Right, and it's in their head, but they weren't born with it in their head.
Oh no, it was carefully put there, and the little seeds have been planted over my lifetime, and we didn't used to have Fox News. Can you imagine a world when you're old enough to know when there was a time before Fox News? And anybody who knows the history of Murdoch and Roger Ailes and that whole thing knows that it was set up for the specific purpose of having an outlet to, well, what they said was the reason they gave on the form when they were getting the Metro Media chain of TV and radio stations. What the reason they gave was, you know, we want to have a conservative outlet because of the liberal bias in the media, which there never has been liberal bias in the media.
No, they just said it so long that it sounded like the truth. It's literally the big lie theory of, you know, Herr Goebbels.
Yeah, yeah, it works, too. That's, history has shown us that if you say something enough, people who don't know any better or won't look any further or deeper into it are going to latch onto it, and that's going to be the bottom level of their marching orders, or at least their orders of belief. And I, you know, like I say, I don't mean to be so fucking wound up today, but, you know, the last couple of days have gotten to the point where, and I'm with Lady B here, and I'm white. I've been white all my life. I was born white, and I will probably die white. Hopefully not.
Yeah, I feel a little sense of cringe saying, yeah, I get it to Lady B, because I don't get it. I mean, I get it insofar as I'm creeped out by seeing people walking around with hog legs strapped to their hip in Wally World, but I am not specifically the target demographic right now.
As far as you know.
Or for the last, you know, 400 years.
Yeah, I get that. I get that. But, it, you know, here we are not even out of a major million-death pandemic in this country and around the world. So we were just starting to venture back into retail outlets and grocery stores, and now this pops up. And when I say this pops up, these sorts of episodes and incidents and murders, killings, madness, seem to be more frequent. I don't remember this 30, 40 years ago or in my childhood. Maybe it was going on and it didn't make the papers. I don't know. It's like they want us to be on edge, because the more of us that are on edge and upset and frightened, somebody in the Horn family knows this. There's probably some biochemistry dynamic in the brains of all of us that when fear is present and those neurons are slapping together and that biomechanical chemical thing is going on, that you don't see straight. Could I be onto something? Am I barking up the wrong tree here?
No, I mean, I think we all know that the adrenal response of fight or flight is very much real.
But I'm not talking just during the incident. I'm talking just in everyday life.
Well, that's unresolved trauma.
Yeah. I'm sorry. I'm sorry for continuing to say I'm sorry. But it's like I don't even know how to express this sometimes. And I know it can't be just in my head, because if it was just in my head, other people wouldn't be talking about it, unless they're in my head and I know they're not. Do you get what I'm saying?
Yeah, I do.
I just and like I say, I have the advantage of not being of color. But even that is not a protective protection. It helps people, and it's maddening that it's even gotten this to this point. And yet millions of people are going to flip on the channel at whatever time he comes on and Tucker Carlson and the rest of that crew are going to sit there night after night and as far into the future as you care to look and give us their version of reality. And I have reality there in air quotes. And here we are, and we got an election coming up. Hell, we're not even through the fucking primaries, and we may already be screwed for all I know. And I hate to be that way, Robin. I truly do. But sometimes when you're downtrodden and disheartened and put upon decade after decade, I've been down so long, it looks like up to me, kind of.
No, I know.
I'm sorry. I'm rambling. Talk a minute. Let me
No, that's okay.
Like I need more caffeine.
I'm slowly but surely reintroducing caffeine into my life. I can drink about a half a can of Coke now. Which,
we've missed you. We've missed you in the caffeine brigade, Robert.
Oh, I know. I mentioned last night that Annette was a teenager sitting. And,
oh, yes.
And so it got up to like 1 o'clock in the morning. I'm like, I'm wide awake. Why am I wide awake? I wasn't jittery or anything. I just wasn't tired. I was like, oh, wait a minute. We had a little Coca-Cola today, didn't we? Yes, we did.
Did you have restless leg syndrome?
I don't know, but you know, I mentioned the homecoming of Lucy Purr, the tortie. Bless her heart, she spent the entire evening looking for her mama.
I remember you saying that.
But when bedtime came, I snuggled down under the covers, and she ran in, and it's just the sweetest thing. And she literally snuggled up right next to my. Snuggled up right next to my head, just in the crook of my neck, and began to purr for all she was worth.
See, I missed that, Robin.
It was so sweet. And she was just good as gold. She didn't get up and wander around all night. She was just happy to be right there. And she put up with me rolling around. She's like, yeah, come on, Mom.
Oh, yeah, they'll adjust. They're like... I don't know, like some child's toy that changes shapes, yet conforms itself to the container in which it is put. Cats are we are the silly putty for cats, I guess. When we change positions, they let us get changed, and then they'll just adapt themselves to whatever shape or form we.
They're Borg like that. They're fuzzy, warm little Borg. I got a note from Ron in Raleigh saying, many years ago, I lived in an apartment on the second floor. The unit below me was rented by a merchant marine. He was at sea for 6 months at a time, but when he came home, he strapped on his 45 ACP for the whole time he was home. This was in the late 70s, early 80s. Always freaked me out. I was on my high school rifle team. I enjoyed that very much, but haven't touched a firearm since. Well, I mean, back then, it's like, well, what do you know that I don't know? And I'd be a hypocrite if I didn't note that there was a time when I strapped and carried, but it was because I was in a position where I had been told that there was more than a couple of people who were very much interested in seeing me get on alive. And I recognized that, you know, you really can't defend against an ambush, but I felt the need to try to shoot back if anybody shot first. And there was a time when we entered our home and went through it like a damn SWAT team. I would go through it like some sort of cop, clearing room by room until my little family could come in and it would be safe. And it's a hell of a hard way to live.
I was going to say, you cannot live like that.
And it made me a nervous wreck. So
did Ron ever find out from the guy what the particulars were of what was behind the?
No, it just creeped him, and I see it everywhere. And
I'm not sure if I ever had that conversation with my brother, you know, the one that likes the shooting irons. I think we talked about guns, but I don't think I ever came out and asked him, why do you have so many guns? And why do you feel that everywhere you go, you need to be armed?
Well, I don't know, Scott. Why do you have so many pipes?
Well,
I'm just a collector.
I like to take them out of my mouth and point them at people when I feel threatened.
Well, I feel the same way about guns.
Sometimes I'll lift my.
But I mean, look at the story. I don't know. I don't even know if you're listening, but look at the story from last night. Yeah, little shit kid goes and cracks a whip against the door of their black neighbor's daddy, goes and knocks on the door and says, what the hell's going on? Well, the little shit kid's daddy meets him at the door with a goddamn gun, and the gun just goes off.
No, I was late to the show last night. Where did that happen?
Oh, it was Texas.
Oh, God.
And the gun went off. I mean, I don't know. Maybe he flounged on the trigger. The gun went off.
Sometimes my trigger finger has a mind of its own.
And we're finding out more about what happened with the Orange County shooter.
Oh God, that was a church environment. That's an entire different level of madness.
Yeah, it is.
What was it, Luna Niguel or Laguna Beach? One of those lagunas.
Laguna Woods.
Woods. Okay, this. I don't go up there very often because it frightens me. Orange County, I don't care how many representatives they have who are Democrats, it's still a fear time for me to go up to Orange County. But
so, you know, here you've got a picture of an aggrieved guy, David Winway Chu, and his wife divorced him, and she moved to Taiwan. So he then sold the building that he owned in Vegas, but he couldn't afford to rent. He killed one and wounded five when he opened fire during the in the Laguna Woods Church.
Wasn't it over some difference of opinion on Taiwan versus mainland?
Well, no, he was China? Pissed. He was pissed off at Taiwanese people. Because his ex-wife divorced his ass and went to Taiwan for cancer treatment.
So, well, I guess it doesn't take
and
much.
So his life spiraled out of control, and somehow or another, it became Taiwan's fault. So he goes and shoots up a majority Taiwanese church. But he was abusive. His neighbors said that they could hear him yelling at her day after day through the walls. And by the time she left for Taiwan, she had stage 4 lung cancer.
Jesus. Well,
It was an Irvine Taiwanese Presbyterian church in Laguna Woods.
Okay, I know where Irvine is. I've been there before.
And yeah, he sat in the back reading a newspaper, a Chinese language newspaper, for several hours. Then he chained the door shut, tried to jam the locks, opened fire with a handgun.
Didn't he put super glue in some of the locks?
Yeah, that's what he was trying to do with.
So this didn't just come to him. I mean, he was like that guy allegedly in the suspect in the Buffalo. Has anyone talked to that kid's parents and find out what the family environment was like? Was he raised this way or what?
And of course he had been a Marine. Was big on American flags.
This is Mr. Chow we're talking
about. Yeah, Mr. Chow, and they said he left statements saying that Taiwan should not be separate from mainland China. Oddly enough, there seems to be some disagreement as to whether he was born in mainland China or was born in Taiwan. But the guy basically fell apart because having abused his spouse for a while, she divorced his ass and left.
You know, if all it takes is a broken relationship, shouldn't Liz Taylor have been a mass killer and a gun nut?
It's a hell of a note. Well, I mean, there are many, and see, maybe this is where the liberals and progressives get in trouble, because we want to see causation beyond the immediate. This guy was 68 years old. He sold the buildings, but the investors who bought the buildings for him ran the rent up to $1,400 a month, and he couldn't pay $1,400 a month rent. And he applied for government assistance and couldn't get it. So he got sort of intermittent work as a security guard. And he asked Vegas area churches if they could help him, and no.
Oh, no. You don't go to a church and ask for help. You go to drop stuff in the basket and nod and agree a lot.
He was described as just a homeless old man.
Jesus.
Arnold in PA points out, losing your partner is brutal. End of life crisis.
Well, it is brutal, having been there, and losing jobs and losing homes. But this is the buffeting. See, that's when your ticket is punched when you come into the world. There's a better than even chance that you're going to go through some stuff. And you look at the X number of hundreds of thousands, millions of people who get their ticket punched into life. They go through stuff and they don't kill people or threaten people. So I'm kind of thinking the problem is with these people who can't process the verities of life successfully, unless I'm, oversimplifying it. I don't think I am either. I don't think
you are either. I don't think in a situation like this there's such a thing as oversimplification. Back to the gun. Ron in Raleigh says he only said hi in passing. I don't believe he was ever home long enough to make enemies. That's why I couldn't figure out why he felt the need to be strapped. Well, maybe he just got used to it as a member of the Merchant Marine. Maybe he went strapped, in ports of call other than the U.S. I don't know. Christopher in Oregon says so the gun just went off. Of course. So when the gun just went off, did it enter the victim deep in the heart of Texas? I know, not funny. No, mercifully, the bullet blew past the little girl that the little boy was trying to torment in the first place. But that's America. Ain't that America, home of the free? Ain't that America, they're shooting at me?
And people wonder,
little blood red houses for you and me.
People wonder why some people have gotten to the point where they seldom leave their homes. I mean,
well, consider, and of course this developed during the pandemic, but I can see where maybe Lady B and others would become dedicated users of the We'll Shop For You program. Just pull up in your car and they load the groceries in, or DoorDash. Didn't much care for, I mean, not DoorDash, Instacart. Wasn't crazy about Instacart. And frankly, I enjoy the physical act of going out and shopping for things. I don't take a particular degree of pleasure in, like, ordering shit online, because I know what's going to happen. Because if I order it and it doesn't work out, that means I got to go to all the trouble of returning it. Whereas I can browse the racks or whatever in the store, find something, I can go try it on. It works, it doesn't work, whatever. But I go out the door knowing that I'm satisfied with my purchases.
Plus, and interacting is a more human experience,
right?
In the stores and the shops and the little places where you get a hot dog or whatever. You know, and you get fresh air, and you smile and nod to just about everybody you see, and you shy away from some of them.
I'm nice and I'm social in stores. I mean, I had a lovely interaction with a couple of ladies my age in the store the other day, and I picked up a dress, and I went, you know, I just love this floral print and the color scheme and everything, but my God, that would be a disaster on me. And one of the other ladies says, well, hold it up. And I held it up. Yep, put it back. Put it back. She goes, that one. You want that one. I held it up. She goes, get that now.
I don't care if it does bring out your eyes. It's wrong. It's all wrong for you. I don't know. This is the world we live in, I guess.
Well, you have gotten a cowbell from Billable Rick.
Uh-oh.
So let me award it. Since Liz Taylor was so messed up in her personal life, why didn't she become a gun nut?
Well, yeah. I mean, if a broken relationship, and she went for twosies, I think, with, was it Eddie Fisher or one of them that she married?
No, she married Richard Burton twice, didn't she?
Richard Burton, yeah. I think, yeah, you're right. It got to the point where they threw minute rice at, when they were coming down the steps.
Okay, that's two of them.
I don't mean to. I don't know. But
Now they throw bird seed, and then birds just pop up all over the place where the bird seed sprouts.
Yes, indeed.
Jude just wrote in and said, I understand Lady B and Mike last night both brought up what we do in the violently trying times that face us, along with concern about simply going to the grocery store. My sense is we continue to live our lives, yes, with concerns present, but it appears also as some type of social experiment and or engineering is occurring, definitely one that is serious, but still we're so much more than fear. Even though the thoughts of being killed resides now within us, yet it also comes from the ground of compassion for those who have been murdered. Just my thoughts, Robin, dear, on how I manage my life currently. Well, you have to. You can't just cave up. I mean, part of the problem I think that we have is that we've got too many. And I don't want to go. I don't want to go to the dark side and start talking about violent video games. And I don't think it's the video games themselves per se. I think it's disaffected white boys sitting in dark rooms alone, ruminating on why they can't, why girls don't like them. And the reason girls don't like them is because they never meet them, because they sit alone in a dark room ruminating on why girls don't like them. Lather, rinse, repeat.
And to the a lot of those fellows, to the extent they do have interaction with other people, it's other guys like they are.
Yeah. And then you go down the self-harm rabbit hole of incel or incelism and whatever. I mean, you remember the young woman who was simply walking home from college in upstate New York a month or so ago? She was just walking home from class one afternoon, and a guy that she didn't know, and he didn't know her, just cruised up beside her and blew her away. And then just went driving about, what is it, Niagara County for a while. Until they caught up with him. And you see this behavior, and yes, it's speculation. But it's hard not to see incels among it. And it's a real thing. It hasn't gone away. And if you go and you look in the filthier parts of the internet, you will see a degree of misogyny, and that doesn't even adequately describe it, and a degree of outright just barbaric, vicious, vitriolic hatred for women.
Oh, it's beyond malignant. It's a pathology. I don't know if there's... What is that big book that has all of the...
The DSM-5.
Yeah, I don't know if they have a category, but they sure... That qualifies for a category, because if there are a lot of people sitting in dark rooms ruminating over just how bad they've got it and how everybody else is wrong... Well, I'm sure there is a diagnosis for that, but I'm talking about that sooner or later they'll spring into action and leave their little cave, and they're packing heat, and they'll. But according to the reports that I've seen, this Buffalo incident, apparently the guy visited there a couple of times to get his bearings and decide.
Yeah, he reconned it.
Reconned, yes. And again, I go back to his family. Has anyone talked to his family to find out, did he live in mom's basement? I mean, that's where a lot of them seem to dwell.
I have not seen that part yet. I know that the warrants have been served on the family and et cetera. But I want to return just for a moment because I got to close the program out because I have a meeting here in a little bit that I have to attend, and then we'll be back to a regular program tomorrow. But Podbean will still find some way to screw me at the end of May, I have no doubt.
It's in the bylaws.
Right. But more to the point, I think people, and I'm not saying go over and read these things, but make yourself more aware of the nexus between incels and violent right-wing extremism and racist groups and white nationalist groups, white supremacist groups, neo-Nazi groups. You know, all of these denizens of the filthy right. Because as that one expert that I quoted yesterday pointed out, they all draw from the same potential. When they all draw from the same potential pool of disaffected young white men, I mean, you have to ask a question. You know, where's the disaffected young women? Why is this shit perpetrated by young white men? I mean, it cannot at this point be simply coincidental. And then we reach the question of, yeah, okay, what do we do about it?
Well, I think the reason you don't see women showing up in the category is women have a certain resilience and a tendency to take a lemon and make lemonade and rise above whatever their situation is.
All right. Well, then let's take the next one. Let's take the next group. Now, I know that for 400 years, white people on this continent have been scared to death that one of these days, black folks are going to rise up and be as shitty to white people as white people have been to them. But apart from a couple of sporadic, abortive uprisings of enslaved people, No.
Not really.
No, instead you get Rosewood, and instead you get Tulsa, and you get Wilmington. And well, of all, you know, so literally people with nothing to complain about are doing all the slaughtering. And I'm simply flummoxed. So where, you know, if this is just a byproduct of having too many guns, and again, I don't want to be arguing for the other side, but if this is just because we've got too many guns, you'd think somebody besides white guys would be doing this. And it isn't. So something is out there weaponizing, radicalizing young white men. And what I'm trying to say is that there is probably there are flashing lights around places like 4chan. And you start them young. You tell them that they're doomed from jump. And so, you know, if there's no hope, well, then it's kind of like I don't know. Is it the same? And I really don't know. I mean, is this the same motivational impulse of, say, knocking back your one cup of sake and jumping in the fighter plane loaded with dynamite that you've been taught how to fly but not land, and going off and flying it into a battleship or an aircraft carrier? for some elusive notion of a greater glory?
It's a violent manifestation of thinking they're making a point which is based on a false premise that exists only in their dark imagination. Does that capture the dynamic?
I kind of does.
And therein is the problem. If you've gotten, and I can safely say there are likely millions of like-minded, similarly wired folks who are out there.
And so the word came down from Rupert's office. Blame whatever you want to, but make sure that blame is deflected from us. Because Tucker Carlson is all in on great replacement theory. But again, if we think, you know, Fox aims to keep, and I'm not defending them, Fox aims to keep Emery and Marvelline in a state of constant terror and agitation, because they can be moved to, I don't know, call Jimmy J.J. Walker about their dynamite insurance supplement.
Their Medicare Advantage.
Right. But Emery and Marvelline aren't going to go out and buy AR-15s and shoot up a grocery store, mostly. So it's the question is, and, you know, some major news outlet will be talking about this in a few months, and we'll just have to say, well, you know, we were talking about that a few months ago. They're finally going to notice where the radicalization takes place. It's not the violent video games themselves any more than you know, watching Warner Brothers cartoons made me want to go out and buy anvils and drop them on people. It's not, you know, first-person shooters, because God knows there's plenty of people in the Horn Family Community Congregation who play those and have a solid enough grip on reality to understand that that's not real and you don't respawn. So it's what's going on while they're doing these things. And if you go on something like Twitch and you watch the conversation stream by on these people, it blows my mind that people tune in to watch other people play video games. Huh? But there's a lot of conversation not about the game going on while that's happening. It's kind of like the story from years and years and years ago about how terrorist groups would actually communicate in code in otherwise innocuous and banal chat apps that attach to things like, I don't know, Pokemon Go.
Yeah, I remember that.
So, well, we haven't come up with any solutions, but by God, we've identified a shit ton of questions, and that's actually a good start. That's a starting place.
And before I go, I'll just say this to kind of put a cap on it. There are, I would say safely, there are millions of like-minded and similarly wired individuals out there. And every so often, it seems way too frequently, one will pop up and act out. And unlike a video game, the top supermarket massacre, there's no reset button.
Right, and there's no respawn. That's what I meant a minute ago.
Yeah. And what do
but
you
it's
do?
Not that they just pop up. That's the whole thing. Without sounding too paranoid, they are being created.
Oh yeah, I get that. But when I say pop up, I mean something triggers them, and I don't think that's too
well. You've talked about enjoying her work. Go over to ContraPoints on YouTube and watch her video Incels.
I will.
It's brilliant.
I will.
And you will have it, and it's. You know, and it's a video from 3, 4, 5 years ago now, but it's kind of like it's self-updating.
Yeah, well, in a sad, tragic, heart-sickening way. Well, listen, you've got a meeting.
I do, and I got to get beautiful for it.
you were born beautiful.
Oh, thank you.
It's just, you know, now see, when I walk,
it's like that old line from Dolly Parton. It takes a lot to look this cheap.
When I walk into the beauty place, they look at me, you know, give me the once over, up and down, turn around, try that, and I turn around again and say, lady, we do repairs, not reclamation. You know, so that's pretty much where I am.
Oh, God.
Hats off to you.
Well, thank you, Scott. You have a lovely evening.
All right, Robin, and you take care. Horn family, we're all in this together. And keep your sunny side up, people.
Yes, indeed.
And keep loving your heart and bring it forth whenever you can and wherever you can, because you never know when it's going to impact someone in just the way they need for it to happen.
Well, and I always think, I think more and more these days about one of my favorite lines. I remember the first time I read it. Ernest Hemingway's The Sun Also Rises.
Mm-hmm.
And the female protagonist at the end of this book. And, you know, it's a book about people just behaving atrociously.
Well, Hemingway was good at that sort of story.
But he wrote women really well.
Yes, he did.
But they're in the cab at the end of the book. And she looks at Jake and she says, not being a bitch is what we have instead of God. Or sometimes not being a bitch is what we have instead of God. And that's a pretty good existentialist philosophy.
That is. I mean,
you put that right upside next to Kurt Vonnegut saying, all I know is goddamn it, babies, you have to be kind.
I've got to get my needlepoint out and make a couple of pillows. You've inspired me.
Oh, I think you should. No, I think you should do. I think you should cross stitch a sampler with those. First, you have to learn cross stitch.
Well, yeah, there's that. All right, Robin, take care. And Horn family, you all take care as well. And look both ways before you cross the street down at the corner of Walk and Don't Walk.
Yeah, and keep an eye out for young white boys who are strapped in the grocery store. Jesus. All right, Scott, you take care.
All right, see ya.
Bye. And so this we bring this truncated version of the program to the end. Suman with a note, writing from Arizona, subject line Twitch. I asked a teen once why he watches Twitch. He said it's the same reason why I watch cricket. They said they treat Twitch like a game of cricket or baseball. This teen is a well-balanced teen. Just wanted to ask the community if this makes sense. Seemed like a reasonable answer to me at the time. Well, yeah, I guess if you consider video games as like, you know, some sort of competitive sport, yeah. But, you know, at least with watching cricket, some people do actually watch it out in broad daylight and the sunshine and stuff. And not so much that with Twitch, but I'm sounding like a cranky old lady. Yeah, get off the TV screen. Go outside, play around a little bit. Get some sunshine. Of course, I have to be careful, because if I'm outside under the sun for more than 15 seconds or so, I have to come in and be dipped by the heel in unguentine. Who remembers the unguentine? So, a gentle reminder, we do have a challenge on the table. It has $60 to go, $60 grand total to go to meet Joey's challenge and Ralph's challenge, and that would make things better than they are and make the hole not quite as deep as it is. Should have a regular program tomorrow. I just have to go to this meeting this evening. Thank you so much to all of our Patreon and PayPal subscribers and our a la carte contributors. Thank you so much. You're why this exists. Thanks to each and every one of you who share your precious finite time engaging in the program in whatsoever manner you may choose. Thanks so much. Thank you so much, Steve from Georgistan in the chat room. Thank you. Sorry. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, headon.live. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Cold River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, 20 plus years at the forefront of the struggle for human rights and environmental justice in Appalachia, now proudly a union shop. Get your booster. The FDA has approved Pfizer for boosting 5-year-olds and ups, so that's important. They're doing so because it's not over, it's not gone. And we're officially over the million dead mark now, so that means what? 2 million grieving? 3, 4, 5? Do we even know how to count that? Wear your masks, maintain your social distance, and, some little dude with toasty testicles comes towards you saying, "Well, he was just a crazy kid," avoid that miserable little fascist like the plague, because he is. Later.